Hello and welcome back to the Dive and Dig podcast. This week, a shipwreck from the Ottoman period. I first came across this wreck when I visited the conservation laboratories of the Department of Antiquities, Cyprus, by invitation of Dr. Eleni Lezidou, the department's chief conservator. Eleni showed me a magnificent cast iron cannon, which I later learnt was lifted from the Nisia shipwreck in 2014. My imagination was gripped, and so when I learnt my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Stella Domestica, was in town, I had to find out more. I am delighted that my friend, Dr. Stella Domestica, is here in London. We have a special guest appearance. So I'm able to do a podcast interview with her in person, which is really exciting for me. She's come to give the Honor Frost Foundation annual lecture about a very exciting shipwreck called Nisia. And Stella, thank you very much for agreeing to do the podcast. It's lovely to see you.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here too.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. So I've heard about Nisia, but I've never really sort of got the full picture. I mean, I've been lucky enough to see some of the cannon that have been raised from this. So we're looking at the Ottoman period, which, so roughly what's the date of the wreck?
The date of the wreck, now we can say it with some confidence, is at the end of the 17th century. The shipwreck was built at the end of the 17th century, and the wreck must be somewhere in the second decade of the 18th century.
Oh, wow, so this is way out of your normal stomping ground.
Indeed.
So what drew you to something that's so much later than your normal sort of more classical era shipwrecks that you're interested in? Well, there's no amphora. Are there any amphora?
None.
What? No! How can you do a shipwreck without any amphora?
Indeed. That's the interesting story behind me and this shipwreck, is that although I knew I had heard about this shipwreck when I first went to Cyprus. People talked to me about this. But as you said, it was much later than the period that I am working on. And plus, I was excavating another shipwreck, a classical shipwreck, and this had all my attention. Mm. But in 2013, with the economic crisis of Cyprus, the other shipwreck, which was the Mazotos shipwreck, very demanding, could not go on because we cannot secure the necessary funds to plan the next seasons. However, I thought back then, it was 2013, as I said, that we had in Cyprus, we had developed a very good momentum for maritime archaeology because of the Mazotos shipwreck. We had volunteers, we had people from abroad, we have the authorities, the public, everybody was very interested in what we were doing, and I didn't want this to just stop. So I wanted another site to train students, so not that deep. A site that I knew I didn't want to go start looking for new sites. So I thought, why not? We should go to this shipwreck and see what this is. Because back then, all we knew about was a shipwreck with cannons off the coast of Protaras. Nothing else.
Right. So basically, it had been identified, I presume, because of the cannon people had seen. And Protaras is, if I get correct, is on the east coast, isn't it, of Cyprus? So I know Mazotos is deep. How deep is Nisia in terms of it being an easier wreck to train students?
Yes, Nisia is not shallow. It's at 27 meters.
So was there an element of threat? Was it, you know, was it exposed? Was it being looted, or was it just visible and needed attention?
It's an interesting story behind the biography, the recent biography of the site. The site was known to the locals because it's close to the coast. It's 500 meters off the coast. It has been known to the locals since the 1960s.
Wow.
Or that's what ethnographic work by Dr. Anna Dimitriou has revealed. And the first time that this was reported to the authorities, it was in 1994.
Wow.
So people knew about it. Nothing happened, nothing like a proper archaeological investigation. So it was dived again and again. And at some point when the area it is at, which is Protaras area, is a very touristic area, and it's the diving tourism is very developed there. Mm. So it had turned into a recreational park, an underwater park for diving schools and diving centers to take their... Yes, it was an interesting site. Oh, it was a touristic curiosity. And that's why everybody knew about it and nobody paid much attention. We found out again through this ethnographic work that a lot of looting had happened, And when I first dived the wreck in 2013, I realized that a lot of wood was half exposed. I could see the threat of the site anyway. So regardless of my archaeological interests, and because I needed a training site for the students, I thought that it would be a good opportunity to go and have a couple of seasons. I didn't see anything else than that back then.
What's the sort of main essence of the site? So you've got the wood, you've got the cannon. Is there cargo visible? Is it a warship or is it a trading vessel? I mean, sometimes people, you know, trading vessels would carry cannon to defend themselves. How do you understand from the investigations that you've done what the nature of the vessel is?
Well, that's one of the questions we have not answered yet.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Because exactly there is no cargo, at least no cargo that we have seen. If it had a cargo and it was an organic cargo, it was all gone. But again, it would be bizarre not to leave any traces of this organic material, whatever it was, behind, given that we have the lowest part of the hull, organic material is preserved. We should have something else.
Yes,
we found nothing.
So how big is it? How long is it?
Well, what has been preserved is about 20 meters long, but we are looking about a much bigger ship. We estimate it could be about 30 meters long because of the size of the timbers. They are considerably, it's not a small ship. Four cannons are not enough to justify a warship. That's how many we have identified so far. We've raised one, but there are still at least three at the site, maybe more. But because of the looting, we don't know if four was the original armament. Maybe it had
more. It's probably quite hard to lift a cannon, isn't it? How heavy are they?
The one that we lifted weighed 800 kilos, so something a little bit less than a ton. For all these reasons, we don't know what kind of ship it was. Maybe it had it operated under another capacity. I mean, maybe it was built as a warship and then it was used as something else, because there is a lot in this ship that this ship is has a lot of surprises.
Ooh.
And one of the surprises we had when we did an analysis of the wooden species, this was done by Dr. Britta Lorenzen, the University of Georgia. She identified that most of the timber species was oak, but oak, the North European oak, not Mediterranean oak. That means that the ship was not built in the Mediterranean.
Wow.
Which changed a lot the context in which we have to try and interpret it into. So that was one thing, very surprising and very interesting. And on the other, everything on that ship, everything like the little bit of pottery that is left, we found smoking pipes, which are Ottoman smoking pipes, not European smoking pipes, and also a very specific vessel. Again, we found very few fragments, but it belongs to a water jar called Kulal, which is common in Egypt and the Red Sea, not elsewhere in the Ottoman Empire. So kulals are not found, for example, in Asia Minor, Greece, the Levant, but only Egypt and the Red Sea. And in the Red Sea, we know three shipwrecks. The Red Sea.
Yeah.
We know
yes,
three shipwrecks with cargo, with kulal as cargo. So this is a ship that was built somewhere in Europe and then operated in the Eastern Mediterranean. Most probably Egypt was the last port of call or the area that it was working or operating at, and sunk off the east coast of Cyprus.
Yes, it's fascinating, isn't
it? It is.
But that's, again, that's the sort of thing that makes archaeology really interesting, when you take little bits of evidence and patch them together, and then you suddenly come up with this sort of image that doesn't actually sort of account to what you'd thought it was going to be. That's why it's so much fun. So you've got small amount of ceramic. I'm sorry. I know how much you love them. Any other finds on that help you work this puzzle out in terms of...
Well, yes. The other, what we have found, there's a lot there in abundance, is pieces of wooden logs, tree branches cut, and some other logs, bizarre logs with pointed ends. They are all stuck together on the ceiling planks, and we think that they're all firewood.
How weird. So they're carrying around firewood?
Well, they needed firewood for their kitchen.
Ah, so you think it was actually part of the working operations of the boat?
That's what we think, because as a cargo, it couldn't make much sense.
Mm.
So among this firewood, these pieces of firewood, we found bricks. And we think that the bricks belong to the hearth of the ship's kitchen.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And we are thinking that if we are able to identify the provenance of the bricks, that will shed light on the ship's identity.
Yeah.
We haven't finished the fabric analysis and the fabric characterization yet. There is a project in collaboration with the Cyprus Institute. So they're all working for the fabric characterization, and hopefully we'll be able to understand if where the bricks are coming from, and maybe that will give us an idea where the ship was built.
Mm.
We have some ideas already, however.
Built or was operating from? Maybe both. Or
we think that the hearth was there when it was built.
Right,
of course, If it went through repairs and maintenance, maybe they changed. But we think, taking into consideration the timbers, who were the powers, the European powers that were operating in the Ottoman Empire during that period, we think that maybe the ship could be Dutch. And we say that because the bricks are small, and compared to the Swedish or the French or the English bricks.
Yeah.
Okay, they are not, the bricks are not that standardized, but because we know a lot this period, we have a lot of brick industries in the Western Europe, so there is some kind of standardization. Our bricks are small, and the Dutch bricks were the smallest of the ones we know.
It's amazing, isn't it? You never, I would never imagine exactly that can tell you so much about.
Yeah.
So
indeed,
the thing I'd really like to ask, though, because at the beginning you said that you felt that the vessel was dated from, was it the end of the 17th century? Is that right? But you think that it was sank some 20, 30 years later. So what's the bit of evidence that gives you an understanding of the when it was lost?
Yes, that's all the analysis. I mean, we, Sturt Manning and Britta Lorenzen are doing both the dendrochronology the species identification. So the dendrochronology of the structural timbers gave us the date that the trees fell, so most probably close to the date of the ship construction. But we also analyzed, we dated with carbon-14 part of a firewood, two olive seeds, and a hazelnut shell, a nutshell. So in a nutshell, this gave us a later date. So this is the date toward the wreckage, because all of that, the seeds and the firewood, cannot be very old.
No, 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 exactly. Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? So have you got any other finds? Or I mean, it's like a big puzzle, isn't it, really?
It's a big puzzle. Again, I said we don't have any coins yet. Oh. We don't have anything else that would help us identify the ship, and that's a big puzzle.
Yeah.
Because, okay, we suspect that it could be Dutch, but it could be something else. Yeah. We don't know yet. And that's one of the goals for next year, look at the shipbuilding details and maybe identify the shipbuilding tradition.
Yeah.
So other finds, okay, we have some lead shots from pistols. Again, it seems that they are the caliber that was used in the Ottoman Empire, but we don't have enough to say that. And we have some cannonballs, again, that cannot help us to say much.
What about the cannon?
The cannon itself is interesting because it was studied by Ruth Brown, who is a specialist in cannons here in the UK, and she identified it as an English gun, an English Saker, which has a number engraved on its base ring. We thought it was a date when we first saw it, and we saw it after the cannon was treated and cleaned, so it took some years. But no, she said that it's a number that represents its weight in Amsterdam pounds, and that's another connection with the Dutch traders. So it was an English gun which was sold to the Dutch. And that was common practice at the period because the Dutch didn't have cannons. So it was actually the English and the Swedish that were exporting cannons everywhere else. They had enough cannons, not only for them, but enough to export. So if an English or a Swedish gun is found on a ship, doesn't mean that the ship is English or Swedish. Yes, so the cannon itself gave us a lot, but the cannon is early. It's early. It's mid 17th century. Wow. But again,
yes,
it makes
portable.
Sense.
Yeah,
yes, because
yes,
they had a long life.
Yeah. So how many seasons have you done?
Three. Only three.
Gosh, and all this information is coming
indeed.
Up.
No, it's fascinating. It's fascinating because it's a big ship. As I said, we can progress a lot. That's good for archaeology. The sediment that it covers, it's very thin. It's bad for the ship, though, because it's deteriorating fast.
Yeah. So are we looking at a sort of, you know, a shift in Dr. Stella Domestica's focus of research? Are you going to shift from the classical period to become an Ottoman specialist, or...?
I don't think I will. But I'm very glad I did that, to a great cost of other projects that have been waiting, because I think it was very important to open this window in Cypriot archaeology. As you know, as other archaeologists of the region, Cypriot archaeology is focused on antiquity and prehistory in particular, but more recent periods were neglected. And the fact that this was a shipwreck site that was known to the community and the authorities for many years before any proper investigation took place, shows exactly this approach of the society. It's not just the community, the diving community or the authorities. Everybody feels that more recent antiquities or more recent monuments are not that important. And that's why the divers of the area were just using it, and they thought it was okay to souvenir, to do this very bad practicing, the souveniring from the shipwreck sites. I just want to say that they were not looting to sell necessarily.
No, no.
Some of them did, but they thought it's okay.
That's really interesting, isn't
and
it?
Now I feel proud that our team, the university, showed them in practice that this equally important with other shipwrecks that we work on. It was neglected. It's a, a neglected site that it rewarded us when we shifted our attention to it.
Fantastic. Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to, you know, what you find in the future as well, because obviously it's a ship that's going to keep giving in a way, revealing new secrets. So thank you very much for allowing me to cross-examine you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to share all this.
What a myriad of mysteries. And if you want to find out more, you can follow the recording of Stella's lecture on the Honor Frost Foundation website. Thank you to Stella and her team and the Department of Antiquities. I hope you enjoyed and will tune in again to the next podcast brought to you by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that preserves maritime archaeology in the Eastern Mediterranean. Thank you for listening.